welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program, our first show of the new year, and we have very high hopes and expectations for what this year will bring. Welcome to the show, everybody. James Edwards here with you now on New Year's Day evening, if you will. It's Saturday, January 1st. And we're here, as always, from the friendly confines of WLRM Studios, AM 1380 here in Memphis, Tennessee. Also, of course, broadcasting tonight to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network across the country and, of course, simulcasting around the world to the Internet, our Internet audience at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, and you might have, because last week was Christmas, last Saturday was Christmas night, so we aired a replay of our most recent show with Jared Taylor and Kevin McDonald. So it's actually been 2 weeks since we've been on the air, and I want to remind you that we are having an online virtual fan party, online chat right now at cfcc.org, the website of the Council of Conservative Citizens. We invite you to join us there and become part of the show as you interact with us and our guests live while the show is taking place. All you got to do, if you're listening to me now and you're listening to the program online, is go to cfcc.org and join the chat party there. We will look forward to seeing you. Now, before I turn it over to Keith Alexander, he has a very busy first hour for you, and we are excited about all the great and exquisite commentary he's going to be bringing this evening. I just want to make mention of something that we did. This was something new. We took an online poll. Now, originally, we were just going to do a little straw poll of the audience to see who they would like to hear as their first guest of the new year, but we were having so many, we were flooded with so many great suggestions that we not only booked up the first guest of the year, we booked up the first month of the year. The Political Cesspool lineup of guests for our program for the first 5 weeks of the year, going into the first week of February even, has been announced at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. So check that out. I think you'll be excited to see some of the great patriots and luminaries that we are going to be featuring here as we kick off the new year on the right foot. When you are listening to the voice of the American right, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Political Cesspool radio program. Be sure to check us out at thepoliticalcesspool.org. What a great way to start the year. Now, that being said, I'll turn it over to Keith. And you know, Keith, that online poll, we received over 100 votes on the blog itself, and we received many more than that via email. It was our most popularly commented blog in the history of the radio program. And when our fans speak, we listen. We've gotten a lot of the top vote getters booked.
Yes, our audience is very engaged with us, and we appreciate them. You know, we took last week off, but unfortunately liberalism didn't, and as a result, we are backed up with all sorts of sewage to run through the cesspool here. Typical liberal indignities, they never stop. They're as relentless as a heartbeat or a drumbeat. And let's kick it off for this first segment with one I'll call $5 a gallon gas. On CNN and on Sean Hannity and on all sorts of, you know, normal mainstream outlets this past week, a retired oil executive named John Hoffmeyer has been appearing, predicting that by the end of the current year, 2011, gasoline prices will average over $5 a gallon nationwide. And, of course, they give all sorts of, you know, don't be alarmed reasons for this. But, quite frankly, with the commutes that some people have been forced to undertake because of liberalism, and also with the dependence that we have on gasoline, particularly in the United States of America, $5 a gallon gas is not good news for anybody except possibly an oil executive. And they give official reasons for this. One, the primary reason that he gives is the unprecedented growth in consumption by India and China for gasoline. They're getting wealthy through manufacturing goods. And, of course, their manufacturing sector is growing at the expense of the United States, which wasn't merely an accident either, but you never know that by listening to the mainstream. But, of course, one of the real reasons that they won't ever identify is that there's been no new drilling or refining in America presently. There hadn't been any refineries built since the 1970s. And liberalism, through the Environmental Protection Agency, through a series of regulations, and through a pernicious liberal doctrine known as radical environmentalism, has been shutting down oil drilling in the United States, really, since the 1970s. You know, ANWR, you've heard of, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is just loaded with petroleum resources, has been put off limits by both the Bush and the Obama administration. The California coast has been off limits since the Santa Barbara oil spill in the 70s. The eastern Gulf Coast is off limits. Now there's a drilling moratorium on the west Gulf Coast. And all of this is strongly, it's basically a shutdown of the American oil industry. We're basically relegated to drilling oil out of the holes we've been drilling from since the 1970s. Now, why is this? There certainly hasn't been any subsiding of the consumer demand for oil in the United States. The reason, of course, gets back down to one of the primary bugaboos that we talk about all the time, which is globalism. You know, it's really ironic, James, that you have the United States government selling drilling rights in the Gulf of Mexico to the Chinese, but they don't allow American companies and Western companies to drill for oil in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, why in the world would that be? The reason is the same old Fabian socialist mantra that we've been hearing for over 100 years. They want to equalize incomes throughout the world. And, of course, if they do that, the United States has about the furthest to fall of anybody. And, you know, people just don't seem to wake up to that problem, James. What do you think?
Well, Keith, people don't seem to wake up to much at all unless it's to check the score of the most recent football game. But we're going to wake them up tonight, and we're going to wake them up every Saturday night here in 2011, just like we've been doing for the past 7 years now. But first, we got to take a break, and we're going to do that, and we're going to come back with more on the Political Cesspool Radio program right after this.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Not only are we just getting started this evening, we are just getting started this year, and we couldn't get started much more quickly than we have tonight. It is the first night of the new year, 2011, and we are honored to be here with you live. Live, unrehearsed, and uncensored, red hot and rolling we are. James Edwards and Keith Alexander, you'll also hear from Bill Rowland and Winston Smith tonight as we go through the stable of our thoroughbred co-host tonight. The only stallion that has the evening off is Eddie the Bombardier Miller. Yeah, we scratched him tonight. He has a bum leg. But anyway, You'll be hearing from him soon enough this month as we get everything rolling for a brand new year. I made mention earlier that we had conducted a poll, just got a flood of responses. We have booked up the entire first month of our year, our program calendar, with 2 and 3 guests a night for the first 5 weeks, and they are some names that I think you will be readily familiar with. Check that out at our website. Also featured on our website tonight, you will find Winston Smith's top 10 most hateful quotes of 2010. He'll be on later tonight to go through those. We also have our predictions blog entry that allows our listening audience to log on and issue their predictions for the year, and the top 10 moments of the political cesspool's year that was, our top 10 moments from 2010. We'll be covering that tonight. We'll be covering our predictions tonight, the top 10 most hateful quotes, and, of course, our first guest of the year coming up later this evening. Don't forget to join us in the online virtual fan party right now that's happening, this online chat hosted by the Council of Conservative Citizens. The chat room's starting to fill up, so come on over. Be part of the show at cfcc.org. Now, back over to my good friend and brother-in-arms, Keith Alexander. He is locked and loaded tonight.
Yeah, just to touch back on the topic of the first 15 minutes that we were talking about earlier, one of our listeners in the chat room pointed out that oil and gas from the Alaskan pipeline is being sold to China and Japan. Of course it is, because we no longer have corporations like the petroleum companies that are economic nationalists. Instead, they're globalists. And, of course, they think it's a great crime that Americans can get even $5 a gallon gas when people in Europe are paying $8 a gallon. And they're basically, this is being endorsed by the people in the government that you elect, ladies and gentlemen. They think that it's a horrible thing that you slubs in America, particularly in the American middle class, are the beneficiaries of $5 a gallon gas or $3 a gallon gas or whatever. You know, you should be paying the world rate, and they're not going to be satisfied until you are. But on the other hand, Citgo, which is owned by the Venezuelan dictator Hugo Chavez and his government, that's obviously being run for the benefit of the Venezuelan people. So are the Chinese oil companies. See, free trade is what this is based on. Free trade is supposed to be a big conservative mantra, but my experience has been that free trade, you know, the being a nation that believes in free trade is like being the or being the only nation in the world that believes in free trade is like being the only woman in town that believes in free love. We are that woman in the United States, and we're having predictable results. Meanwhile, every other nation in the world that is growing, India, China, Venezuela, they're economic nationalists. We'd better get back on the bandwagon, because if we don't do this, James, what's going to happen to the United States is we're going to be left behind. We have hamstrung ourselves just like the English Empire did with the repeal of the Corn Laws in 1846, and they went from being the premier power of the world to being basically a dependency of the United States, James.
I'm looking here, ladies and gentlemen, at Keith Alexander's legal pad. It is fully exhausted. Now, you know how many pages come in a legal pad. They are full from the top line to the bottom line of each page with his handwriting. That's how many notes he has brought to the studio this evening as we sit in our comfortable digs here in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, WLRM Studios. Keith, I know in talking with you earlier this week and going over the agenda for tonight's first hour, you had a full 4 segments prepared. So certainly don't want to waste any of that time. You've got a lot more to cover tonight.
Yeah, don't know if I'm going to cover it, but we're going to give it a shot. The second segment is called I'm from the Government and I'm Here to Help You. Now, all of you have heard of that before. It's the punchline in a joke called The Three Great Lies. What are the three great lies? The first one is the check's in the mail. The second one, unfortunately, is too X-rated to say over the radio. And the third one, the one that really is a punchline, is I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. Well, in the Commercial Appeal, our local paper, last Sunday, there was an article on the first page entitled Income Gap in Shelby Grows, Census Finds. Let me read you just a couple of lines from it. It's nearly 20 miles from the porch of the St. Paul Avenue address where John Wilson looks out on a row of abandoned houses to the 18-room, 12,000-square-foot mansion that crowns an exclusive development off Houston Levee. But in economic terms, the distance is growing steadily wider. The home of Wilson, a 59-year-old retired carpenter, is in Census Tract 40, the poorest of all the metropolitan, of all of Memphis, metropolitan Memphis. It's a place where the median income is less than $8,000, where only one child in 10 lives with married parents, and where nearly half of the residents receive supplemental security income or some form of public assistance. Now, that sets the stage. You know, now that you have, you know, been put in guilt mode about John Wilson's predicament and the predicament of people like him, he goes on to tell you about, you know, these great elite parvenu McMansion suburbs that are being built in the far reaches of Shelby County. But then, you know, this is a counterintuitive headline. It's intended to make you feel guilty, make you feel bad. You're supposed to get all weepy and concerned because the poor aren't closing the income gap and reaching and making as much money as you, when, you know, conversely, any sane person would be concerned about themselves if there wasn't an income disparity between themselves and the poor. Acquiescence in your own downfall and destruction is the hidden premise. You don't deserve your prosperity. Again, just like you don't deserve $3 a gallon gas, it's going up to $5, and quite frankly, if there's any justice, it'd be going up to $8. But what was really interesting about this article, James, is what it concluded with. Because what they did, they confirmed exactly what we've been telling you for over a year. Here it is. It said Track 40, bounded in part by Danny Thomas and Walnut, Madison and St. Paul, is the home of the soon-to-be-demolished Claiborne Homes Public Housing Project. City Housing and Community Development Director Robert Lipscomb said that through the federal HOPE 6 initiative, Claiborne residents will get housing choice vouchers to find decent housing elsewhere, along with services such as job training to remove them from the concentrations of poverty, quote-unquote, and the associated problems. We'll work with every person, every family, to provide wraparound social services so we can engineer a better solution, said Lipscomb, who also heads the Memphis Housing Authority. That's the public housing authority in Memphis. You get people in a better environment. Well, they're interested in getting, you know, when you build HOPE 6 housing, which is supposedly mixed use, rich, middle class, and poor, they got to do something with the poorest of the poor that were in those housing projects. And what they do, and what they're admitting they do, is they get housing Section 8 vouchers, where basically the government pays your rent or your house note, and they direct them somewhere. Now, these people aren't capable of finding their own places. So as Robert Lipscomb said, they're helping them, and they're not sending them out to that tract that has that McMansion in it, that 12,000-square-foot home. They're sending them to what are called the inner suburbs, like Bartlett, like Cordova, like Germantown, like South Haven in Memphis, in the Memphis area. And what they're doing is they're destroying those neighborhoods for the people that have striven to, you know, scratch and save and try to improve their lives living there. That's your government trying to sabotage your life.
While Keith takes his breath and takes a drink of his bottled water here, we're going to take a commercial break and come back with much, much more. We are just getting started. If you've not yet joined us in the virtual fan party, the online chat, join us now. CFCC.org. We'll see you there, and we'll see you right after this commercial break.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. All right, welcome back to the first show of the new year. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here with you for this first hour. As we said, not only is tonight's show jam-packed, we're going to be recapping the top 10 moments of the political cesspool's year that was 2010. We're going to be looking ahead to the year to come. We will be covering the top 10 most hateful quotes of 2010. We'll have our first guest of the new year. And of course, Keith Alexander still has plenty more to share with you this first hour. And we're chatting online, the virtual fan party at CFCC.org. It's taking place right now. We invite you to join us, CFCC.org. with the political cesspool online chat. Now, very quickly, we have a caller, a loyal listener from Massachusetts who wants to make a comment.
Oh, yes. Very, very simple, which is the reason why this nutty stuff is happening is because America has been defeated by her enemies. Of Russia, China, and the Middle East, the vultures are picking apart America very, very slowly, along with all these other third world nations. They know that we're weak. Obama's a Muslim communist, and they know they're giving away this country, and we're going to be seeing Tiananmen Square-style massacres occurring in America. So here's a bumper sticker. It might not be right, but the bumper sticker thought is Red Dawn or Tiananmen Square, like in the movie Red Dawn.
That's right.
Chew on that. I thank you for having me on the broadcast, and do have a good one.
Hey, Jeff from Massachusetts, thanks so much for the call. Always great points that you make, and thanks for being a listener. And that being said, Keith, back over to you, my friend.
Okay, let me just do this little wrap-up on Hope 6 Housing. Hope 6 is a federal housing initiative, which is intended to basically turn your inner city. It's not only in Memphis, it's all over, particularly in areas that have large slum areas. And what they intend to do is build a kind of Potemkin village there in the middle of the slum. You know, Potemkin village was a false front village that was put along the rail line in Bolshevik Russia so that when the head of the government would fly by on the train and other dignitaries and whatnot, they'd see all these brand new spanking buildings in there. Well, that's what they're intending to do with the inner city. But of course, one, there aren't a lot of people in the rich and middle income segment of society that are willing to move into the inner city. So a lot of these places wind up being underutilized and people otherwise buy them that can't really afford them. So it becomes ground zero for the toxic asset recovery program or whatnot. All these foreclosures under the CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act, where they tried to force banks and mortgage companies to make loans to minorities who really didn't have credit deserving of these type of loans. And, of course, it's backfired and just about ruined the whole world's economy. Now, the other thing is all of the people that are being displaced that were in the housing projects are being relocated in what are called inner suburbs. You've got them in your community. We have them here in Memphis. And in these inner suburbs, places like Bartlett, Germantown, Cordova, South Haven, in the Memphis area, you find a lot of people who have worked hard to try to distinguish themselves from the crowd and get a better life for themselves and their families. Well, these people are having their best efforts intentionally sabotaged, James, by the federal government, who's moving in all of these people that were the poorest of the poor from the housing projects. And these people from the housing projects bring their crime and all of the other social pathologies you associate with poverty with them. There have been a pair of liberal sociologists from the University of Memphis named Janikowski who've written about this, and there was even a featured article in the Atlantic Monthly last year about this, about how the crime statistics in the inner city have gone down because of Hope 6, but on the other hand, they've spiked upwards in these inner suburbs, and that's because the crime follows the people, James.
Yeah, they do, and this is something that we've talked about time and time again on this radio program, and as I said, Keith, that we're one of the few radio programs that do it. We are the voice of the American right. We're the standard bearers of this sort of paleoconservative fare, and we've certainly, I think it would be suffice to say, have more than carved a niche for ourselves in the world of radio. We are certainly trailblazers that are leading the way once again. So excited to be here with you tonight. I just want to take this point of personal privilege to shake your hand and say I'm really looking forward to riding to the sound of the guns with you for a whole nother year.
Well, we definitely need to know about these things, and people need to be aware of them. Now, the other thing that we need to be aware of is that, you know, this is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. This is what the government is doing to the lives of the middle class. Basically, they're trying to destroy the middle class in America. I can't help but come to that conclusion because there are too many programs like sitting back idly and not trying to improve production when you see gas prices going up, things like that, and then actually moving poor people into middle-class neighborhoods with very predictable results, James. That's just the way things go. Now, Another thing that we're going to talk about is the effect of liberalism on divorce and the role of feminism. A lot of women are dissatisfied with their husband's earning potential, but on the other hand, they're very happy to have things going on, like, you know, these programs that give them preference and affirmative action to jobs and job advancement, along with other so-called protected minorities. Women like having the option of doing that. They also like having the option of not doing it. You know, there is a woman that I've mentioned to you before in Memphis who went to Harvard Law School, got that Harvard degree, displaced somebody else by getting it, worked for about 5 years in a big law firm, decided she didn't like it, and then decided to switch over to plan B, which was to marry a rich doctor and to sit at home and eat bonbons and watch Oprah. Well, the men don't have that type of option, and they're being squeezed out in the job market, and also even they either lose jobs to outsourcing, and of course outsourcing is a result of globalism, which is liberalism, or they're being squeezed out in other ways. There's, for example, they don't have the same job advancement. They don't get the same promotions, the same pay raises that men did back in the 50s. One thing that we've liked to say among ourselves before is that women today want their husband to be Ward Cleaver, but they don't want to be June. They expect their husband to be a limitless resource of ever-increasing money, but they don't see how the liberalism that so many women embrace works at cross purposes with this, James.
Keith, there's many benefits to having you on the show. Not the least of which being, when you come in loaded for bear like you are tonight, I can sit here and eat a burrito while I'm doing the show, which literally, ladies and gentlemen, is what I'm doing right now. Now, if you can hear me smacking here on my microphone. So this is the way it goes. You know, we have our weekly get-togethers midweek. We'll get together at a restaurant here in town, and we'll plan out the show, and sometimes I bring some things to the table for the first hour. Sometimes Keith does. But tonight, Keith's brought everything because I was preoccupied in planning the agenda for the second and third hours tonight. We've got a very busy show the rest of the way. And so I hadn't eaten yet, and I knew Keith could handle it. So, hey, I ain't heavy. I'm your brother, Keith.
I did that on purpose. He was trying to choke down a burrito in mid-sentence or in mid-bite. I handed the mic to him to see how he could handle it.
I handled it well, didn't I, like an old
pro?
You did.
You gulped it down. That big mouth came in handy. Well, here's the point that I'm making. You know, back in the early 50s when the cultural Marxists had moved to America and they decided that they were, you know, going to have a new proletariat, and they decided that the working class was no longer an appropriate candidate. They were just a bunch of bourgeois wannabes. They were going to have to find other people. Well, they picked people that they thought were oppressed and marginalized by American society, and they came up with four primary candidates: blacks, criminals, women, and homosexuals. Now, they knew that their toughest sell was going to be women. They said, how are we going to tell pampered and privileged Western women that they're an oppressed minority? And because of that, you know, they saw that as going to be their big hurdle. But unfortunately for us, and fortunately for the cultural Marxists, they have succeeded in this. They knew that they were never going to be able to displace white males in society with minorities alone. They were going to have to get the women and the brain power they represented in order to accomplish the task of displacement. And unfortunately, they've succeeded in this, as in just about everything else they've endeavored to do, James, beyond their wildest dreams.
I finished that last burrito. Now I've got enough energy and stamina to carry the weight for the rest of the show. But thankfully, Keith wrapped up that commentary right before this next commercial break. So we're going to take it, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
We got to get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we got to get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
If I didn't tell her I
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Seemed to have caused a bit of a commotion in the chat room, Keith, with my revelation that I was eating a burrito. No, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't mean that I've embraced third world culture. It was just the most convenient thing that I could get before the studio, before I came into the studio tonight. So don't read too much into that. I guess I should have lied and said I was eating a some sauerkraut or a shepherd's pie or something. But nevertheless, you know, look, there's a Taco Bell right around the corner from the studio. What are we going to do when we're hungry? But now, okay, that being said, I want to remind you one more time. I'll probably remind you a few more times than that, that we are participating once again in the Political Cesspool Virtual Fan Party online chat. In fact, we just did this one time back in December, and it was so overwhelmingly popular that we did it for the entire rest of the month, and now we have planned to do it indefinitely. So as long as the demand is out there, we will be doing these online virtual fan parties each week simultaneously, taking place with the broadcast of our live show. So join us here at cfcc.org if you're listening to us online tonight. Now, of course, as I say, if you're driving around in one of the cities that has an affiliate station, wait till you get home. Don't try to log in while you're driving. But we'll see you there at cfcc.org. Don't forget, Bill Rowland coming up in the second hour, my co-host and fellow Council of Conservative Citizens board member. We're going to be talking about the top 10 moments in the political cesspool year that was 2010 and some predictions for the coming year. Keith, back over to you, my friend. This is your last segment of the night. It's gone by quickly, as it always does.
Yep, it always does. Let's get on to something else that's been big in the news here in Memphis, and I'm sure it's not big anywhere else, and that's the passing of Clyde Norman Brewer from 1934 to 2010, died at the age of 76. A graduate of Tech High School, one of the old public high schools in Memphis, in 1952, he went on to become a news anchor, announcer, and commentator, first on TV and then on at the Commercial Appeal newspaper. Now, Clyde Norman Brewer divorced his wife and their four daughters in order to pursue and eventually marry a woman half his age. This was in the early 70s. Now, the house wrecker later divorced him when he caught her having sex on the bathroom floor with yet another married man. Now, Norman Brewer has done things like that. He was living with a woman that he wasn't married to at the time of his death. But he's considered a role model, a hero, according to the media in Memphis, the newspaper, and all the radio programs and television, and even conservative mainstream talk show hosts like Ben Ferguson were singing his praises. Why? Because of one thing. He proclaimed himself to be in favor of the garbage worker strike in 1968 on his television show. On the other hand, let's look at his opposite, Henry Loeb. Henry Loeb was a Jewish man who was the mayor of Memphis at the time of the garbage worker strike. He was a businessman. He was happily married to the same woman throughout his life, and he had five children. He never, there was never any suggestion of him being a philanderer of any sort. Now, he opposed the garbage worker strike because at the time, in 1968, there was a state law that prohibited public employees, like sanitation workers, from unionizing. Henry Loeb explained that he thought that was a good idea and that the public was too vulnerable to work stoppages, which would inevitably result from unionizing if the city caved in. He said, "If I give the right to the garbage workers, how can I deny the right to the police and the fire departments?" And he was right. We almost had this town burned down in the late 70s when the fire department went on strike and there was nobody to answer fire calls. But Henry Loeb is a triple-dyed villain. He has been listed at crackedcorn.com as one of the six most horrific bosses of all time. Meanwhile, Norman Brewer is a hero. Now, see, you need to understand what's going on here. Let me read you a little something here that I think will be very much on point. Shelby Steele is a black columnist and commentator. He said the legitimacy of American institutions became contingent upon proving a negative, that they are not racist. It is in a book called White Guilt that he wrote, page 27. Soon this contingency extended beyond black-white relationships in the United States to include all non-white populations throughout the world, as well as the environment and even the rule of law. It was impossible for those traditionally associated with power in America, the white majority, to invoke any sacred text or principle effectively, whether Holy Writ, the Bible, or the Torah, or the U.S. Constitution. Why? Because they lacked the moral authority to do so. We see this all the time. We see this in Memphis when Mark Skoda, who is the head of the Tea Party organization here, is desperately seeking and finds a black person to run for a congressional seat, because somehow it just wouldn't do to have a white person in that seat, because they're running in a majority black district. And, of course, this person got beaten handily. I think they got 25% of the vote, and the incumbent got 75%. But that doesn't matter. See, he has to find some black spokesman to deliver the Tea Party message, because as a white person, he doesn't have moral authority. This explains why Americans are more afraid of being called racist than they are of defending their own borders. It's almost like they're in fear of their mortal souls. It explains why American airport security is turned into a ritual exercise of proving we are not racist by showcasing obvious non-threats rather than going out of our way to keep would-be terrorists from entering into the United States. It also explains why many are desperately intent on keeping the memory of America's racial past on center stage, i.e. Norman Brewer, until almost everything is about race. For today's political opportunists, every issue derives either directly or indirectly from America's original sin of racism. Those who identify on one side of an issue have the power to stigmatize those on the other simply by calling them a name. That kind of spiritual potency translates into moral capital, which in turn justifies political power. Now, why am I saying this? We are paleoconservatives at this show. What does that mean? We're conservatives who embrace the entire conservative agenda as it existed in 1950. The left thinks they've put a lot of things off the table. They are in the process of trying to put opposition to homosexuality into the same taboo topic as race relations. But we're resisting that. You can't let them do that, ladies and gentlemen. If you allow them to have a safe harbor, to have a place, a base where they can go to and lick their wounds, you're never going to defeat liberalism. That's why all of these mainstream liberals that want to concede the righteousness of the civil rights movement in every one of its aspects, homosexuality, feminism, whatever your favorite liberal program is, unless you fight them as a whole, you're never going to win the culture war. That's why a conservative talk show host like Ben Ferguson, that's busy gushing over Norman Brewer despite his obvious shortcomings as a man and as a human being, is never going to win the culture war. You're not serious about winning the culture war unless you're serious about fighting liberalism in all of its manifestations. Liberalism, we've said before, is the modern face of evil. That means every bit of liberalism needs to be opposed, James.
It does, Keith, and I know just the guys to oppose it and lead the charge as we fight to reclaim America's destiny, and they are right here on the Voice of the American Right, the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Keith, you were on fire tonight, and I believe that the consensus of those gathered in our online chat tonight would agree with me as well, and it is beginning to get crowded in there, ladies and gentlemen. It's getting exciting. You know, after having the week off last week, and since we'd only started implementing these virtual fan parties a few weeks ago, I was wondering how many people would come, because as I said, last week fell on Christmas Day, our broadcast, our Saturday night broadcast. We had to play a tape last week because of Christmas, which we were happy to do, because none of us really wanted to come in on Christmas night, but the fans didn't miss a beat. Here they are, first show of the new year, first night of the new year, and they are packed in that TPC online fan party at cfcc.org. Come join us. Still a lot to come. Keith, just a couple of seconds before we take our break at the end of the first hour. Still 2 hours to come tonight. Do you have a final word as we kick off the new year?
We may have taken a week off, James, but we don't take 2 weeks off like Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage and Sean Hannity and all of those people, right?
No, we don't. And I'll tell you this, if Christmas had fallen a day before or after when it did, we would have been there last week. You know, it just so happened Christmas fell on a Saturday, so it kind of knocked us out of the loop. But family does come first. The show's a close second, and here we are on New Year's night proving that once again, and we're going to have a very, very good show tonight, a very good year, and we're going to be talking about that. Making predictions for the year to come while briefly looking back on the year that was. That's what we're going to be doing in the second hour with Bill Rowland. And then, of course, our first guest of 2011 will be on deck during tonight's third hour. So stay tuned for all of that. We thank you for listening. Keith Alexander, my friend, thanks for your service tonight. Keith Alexander, of course, punching the clock for this first hour, as he always does. He's leaving the studio now. Bill Rowland walking in. So we are going to have a very good time tonight, and we're having a good time in the chat room right now. We'll be back with more right after this.
Comes your way right after these messages.
Harv leaped to his feet and said, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah! Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the A.